the Department of Defense says it will soon make a decision on an electronic health record system. The Department of Veterans Affairs wants that system to be its VISTA system, but the VA is suffering through its own IT and healthcare provision problems. Anish Chopra is co-founder and executive vice president of Hunch Analytics and author of Innovative State, How New Technologies Can Transform Government. He was the first federal chief technology officer, and he is my guest today in the executive suite. Anish, it's terrific to see you face-to-face. When you were at the White House, you were on the show and on our morning show a couple of times on the phone. It's great to have you here.
Thank you.
This conversation and the invitation I extended to you came out of just a happenstance. We ran into each other when you were here for another program a month or so ago.
That's right.
And we started to talk about providing health care, not just to people at the VA, not just through federal government agencies, but what we're learning in the private sector about health care. And I want to get into that conversation later, but I want to start with something that my friend Kim McCabe and I were talking about on this program on Thursday.
Yes.
And that is telling success stories that happen inside the federal government. Kim made the comment, and I thought it was very cogent, that right now, agencies are lawyer-led and not leader-led when it comes to talking about the things that are going on inside their organizations that agencies are doing well. That seemed to resonate with you as we spoke before we went on the air this afternoon. Why does that make so much sense to you, and what do you see as a potential solution?
Yeah,
for that?
Thank you for the opportunity. So I acknowledge that that spirit holds when the government is taking official action. That is to say, we are engaging in rulemaking or initiating procurement. There are a set of rules that are in place, right or wrong, that constrain the freedom with which one might have to engage in a dialogue to provide situational awareness, context, and the like. But if you take a bigger picture, and that's where I was keen to engage on this conversation, I actually think the inverse is true. We are leader-led, and what you're seeing now is more and more agencies adopt a get-it-done mentality, which speaks to their vision. Many people come to Washington because they want to solve problems. Now, it used to be the case that the tools in the toolkit required a lot of other folks signing on. I want to spend money, so I've got to go up the budgeting process and get Congress to appropriate. So I've got to have an engagement strategy, or I want to issue a new rule. And so I've got to go through a whole process through rulemaking review to make sure that my particular ideas to get something solved move forward. I suggest in Innovative State that there's now a new set of tools that leader-led organization can turn to that often don't require the same sensitivities on that lawyer-led frustration. It is not difficult for a leader-led organization to open up data. Take a look at all the assets that you have inside the agency and say, I'd like to bring this forward. Just take, for example, the president's recent announcement around notalone.gov, a personal, passionate issue for the vice president who wants to help reduce assault on women and understood that college campuses are a big part of the problem. The decision they made to make public the kind of an accusations database, if you will, across the Title IX program schools, that was a policy decision. Yes, lawyers, I'm sure, at some point signed off, but a leader who wanted to solve problems, shining light on the challenges, could choose to make data open. Others could work with the private sector to consider new standards that will lower barriers to entry and allow for more competition, whatever part of the business community you're in, one can now issue challenges. You go to visit challenge.gov, and there are over 200 challenges posted by leaders who are asking the public to help them solve problems. No knowledge of the FAR necessary, no expertise in procurement policy involved. Simply put, a problem posted on the web, a challenge, paying for results. And then last but not least, we're seeing a growing number of agencies who say, I've got a particular clogged artery, and I'd like to adopt a lean startup that is infused with internal and external talent to spend 6, 9, 12 months to tackle the issue. And they, too, can move forward without a lot of lawyerly intervention. And that's the point of the book. We can solve problems using these new tools that tap into the expertise of the American people, led by a visionary leader who wants to see a problem solved.
We have more information later this afternoon about the book Innovative State, How New Technologies Can Transform Government at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. You talk about the getting back to the leader-led versus lawyer-led. The very positive side of that, of what you're saying there, is what we see with the Open Data Initiative and the information that's more readily available. And I'm gratified to see that many agencies are treating that as a floor and rather than a ceiling. Releasing this many data sets to hit a quota doesn't seem to be standard operating procedure, as it has been many times through, not this initiative in particular, but government
initiatives. Well, it started out that way for
past.
Us, too. No, let me, this is not, mom and apple pie. I mean, my memory was the CIA's high-value data set in our first order was something like the cafeteria menu. So, look, we are going to have lots of this.
You've got
to start somewhere. But let's go back to the celebration part. It was absolutely at the center of our strategy to honor and celebrate best practice. So literally on the whitehouse.gov/open page, we had a revolving carousel of case studies, celebrations of examples where agencies tapped into the expertise of the American people to solve problems. And we had dozens at some point, maybe even 30, 40 case studies that were written with a video. So you could really celebrate and shine light on what was possible. And I will say this, what's amazing to me about the whole celebrative culture is if more and more agencies adopted programs to do this, you'd see incredible success. Secretary Sebelius launched HHS Innovates, a whole program about every, 6 months or so, celebrating the frontline workers who did something innovative to move the mission of the agency forward. And so you saw these kinds of programs evolve, building, I think, from the foundation that the president put in place in the first term.
There are a lot of good things going on, and I'll take this opportunity to just beat the drum again that I and my colleagues here and my colleagues in the federal business media more broadly would love to tell those stories, and I wish we had more success getting information from the agencies that sometimes in the public affairs arena, at least, are still lawyer-led and not leader-led. As this conversation continues and as you go around talking about this book, what are the things that you hear from people inside the federal space about the what's contained in it and the topics that you talk about and the roadblocks that you experienced as CTO and that you're looking at from the outside?
I would say there's a consistent theme I hear. My successor actually coined the phrase better than I could, and that consistently we hear about a wall of disbelief that somehow what we're describing isn't for them. I don't know that I can do this. Is this even possible? I'm just going to be told I can't do these kinds of things. And what my successor and I tried to do in the last several years is to piece by piece prove to the federal workers that that wall is paper thin and that all we have to do is begin punching holes into that wall and you'll realize that it'll come crumbling down and you can actually get a lot more done. Probably the most exciting set of activities I was involved in were these SWAT team projects when our chief of staff in the White House would call a meeting and say, can you please dispatch over to XYZ agency? And we'd scrub in with really talented, incredibly powerful and excited frontline workers and just engaged in them the use of these tools. And within 60, 90, 120 days, they'd start to see results. Not perfect, not end game, but progress, points on the board. And that notion that we can make progress in months, not years, or authorization cycles is part of shattering that wall of disbelief.
Shattering the wall of disbelief, I think, is a really good way to put that. You're kind to credit your successor, Todd Park, with that. It doesn't seem to be printing, though, to the person who's the end user of the service. It doesn't seem to be printing to the customer, the American citizen. Is there a series of events or maybe one or two seminal events that will have to happen before the average citizen will say, well, maybe they're finally starting to get it right?
Well, that's an...
A fair assumption on the citizen's part, but that's the assumption that they have right now.
So let me say something a bit counterintuitive. We should not measure success on the degree to which the public rewards the government with having been achieving innovative status. And what I mean by that is so much of the thesis of my book is built on the principle of handshakes and handoffs, that Washington can shake hands even though it's ideologically divided on these new innovative tools, opening up data as I've described and so forth. That handshake is necessary but not sufficient to realize the vision. To close the gap, we need handoffs to entrepreneurs, innovators in the social sector, the nonprofit, for-profit, other levels of government sectors. So much so that the people may not realize that government is behind the particular wonderful service that they have. I made reference to the fact that the original healthcare.gov that went live in July of 2010 was imbued with these principles. If you visited the U.S. News and World Report health insurance finder site today, 2014, it is still powered by data that we released through an API, application programming interface, on the original healthcare.gov, which was the comprehensive database of all public and private insurance options before the new regulatory reforms kicked in. The point being, their users on the U.S. News Insurance Finder site might be extremely happy with U.S. News, grateful, in fact, that such a service exists. They may not credit the government with having provided the source data, but that in many cases is okay. You and I get the weather from any one of a number of commercially viable services. It's a $5 billion industry, but they all share data that comes from the Commerce Department. Do we care if weather.gov doesn't have as much click-through rates as weather.com? No, that's not the aspiration. The aspiration is that the information is in the hands of the people who can live better lives on account of having access to it. But, and that's the challenge.
But I would argue that another desirable outcome is a satisfied customer base.
Yes.
And the customer base doesn't appear to be very satisfied right now when they think about the government as a whole. Now, we saw during the shutdown when you get down to individual agencies and they expect an agency to be there and it's not there, all of a sudden they like them, the individual agencies, very much.
Well, you know, it's really funny. The first 90-day SWAT team project was to work with the Citizenship and Immigration Service, USCIS. And they were on a billion-dollar IT modernization project, you know, many, many years. God knows if it's on schedule or on budget. I don't remember. And the president said, I want results in 90 days. And he issues this challenge to the agency, to Secretary Napolitano. And we join hands with this incredible team and say, let's carve out a service that will actually solve the needs of the consumer. Surprise, surprise. Let's ask them what they want. And it turns out they just want to be not in the dark, which is to say, where is the status of my application? I don't want to have to hire lawyers to keep knocking on your door to say, are we there yet? Are we there yet? Have you got all the information you need? Just by flipping the data model, which is to say, we're going to, like Burger King, have it your way. We're going to let you email, text, or get calls if you want to know where you, if you've moved in the queue. The customer satisfaction scores for just the USCIS.gov site skyrocketed in the Hispanic version. Now, this is not an agency that typically you would associate with high customer satisfaction scores in the Hispanic community, USCIS. Yet here it is in objective data that the slight shifts we made, this lean startup that listened to the needs and adopted simple ways to open up data and allow that kind of comfort, actually materialized in its customer satisfaction results. So on a micro level, if you think of each of these agencies as products that are delivering services to the people, and you inject this sort of entrepreneurial spirit in the formation of those products, the ways they can make slight improvements over time, you're going to see a lot of improvement in customer feedback. We saw that in the original healthcare.gov. We saw it in a number of these examples.
Anish Chopra is author of the book Innovative State, How New Technologies Can Transform Government, my guest in the executive suite, and we'll continue our conversation in just a moment on In Depth with Francis Rose. Be right back. Welcome back to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. Anish Chopra is co-founder and executive vice president of Hunch Analytics. His new book is Innovative State, How New Technologies Can Transform Government. And he was, of course, the first chief technology officer of the United States. I want to go back to a topic that you talked about in the book and that you talked about on The Daily Show with Jon Stewart, which I enjoyed your appearance on there very much. We should put a link to that at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth later today, too, in addition to information about the book. But you mentioned handshakes and handoffs at the end of the first part of our conversation. And I want to go to a diagram that someone drew for me after we knew that healthcare.gov was not succeeding to the level the administration would like it to succeed. It was the end of October last year. And the part of it that I focus on is the hub where the site was going to go out to, I believe it's eight agencies and
Social
collect
Security,
information.
Immigration.
Yes,
yep.
IRS, et cetera. And knowing what I know about the state of what the database structures are in the federal government, some of them are old, some of them are new, some of them work well, some of them struggle. At that point, it struck me that this was going to be a lot harder road than anybody ever envisioned, not because of the requirement situation. Set that aside. I'm not qualified to speak on that. Not because of the policy issue. That's not my gig either. But just because of this interaction and what you very well call handshakes.
Yes.
Some of these agencies were not ready to do the handshakes that were necessary to provide the customer, the end user, the information they needed. Why is that still so difficult, and how do we get past not just the difficulty of it, but the perception that everything in government should work like that, like eBay does or Amazon does or et cetera? I mean, I can't imagine
you've heard those
a million times.
You know, this does invoke a role I played in that original healthcare.gov, and I want to be very clear about this. It's perhaps a bit more wonky, which is great for the audience you've got. I played a role helping to set the technical standards for how all those handshakes were supposed to operate. And we call that Section 1561 of the Affordable Care Act, the technical standards document. It was done within 120 days of the law's passage or something to that effect. And the core principle that I advocated for was that the consumer be at the center of each of those individual databases. Now, what do I mean by that? Today, I can log into the IRS.gov website, and I can initiate what's called a Get Transcript, where I can download essentially 3 years of my historical returns data. You and I could log into SSA.gov right now and download all of my what used to come in that letter that we used to get in the mail, which is all the you know, how much money you made and how much that's going to contribute to your retirement. So if each node could communicate back to me, the individual, and that I could then parse that information together and present the whole facts to whomever needs to, you know, render judgment, then that would allow for a great deal more innovation and handoffs, not just to the federal site, healthcare.gov, but you could see private sites, you know, healthcareforyou.com, saying, hey, store all of your individual sort of federal data with me, and I'll help you find the plan that's right for you because I've got all this other information that might be useful to you. So I meant that to say part of what makes the interoperability challenges difficult, not just in the federal government, but across the board, is knowing your Francis Rose, I'm Anish Chopra, and how I'm presented in each of these databases that were not meant to talk to each other. That's not how they were built. Jerry-rigging that on the back creates risk and uncertainty, and some agencies will tolerate that risk, others won't. You might recall, for example, one of the first reasons why I went down that road, we had a pilot initiative with the Department of Education and the Department, of course, IRS, to say if you filed an IRS return, you should be able to use that data to pre-populate your financial aid form or the FAFSA. And if you looked at how we implemented that particular pilot, it spoke to this consumer at the center model. You log into the IRS and you authorize a download and an upload, effectively not the cleanest and easiest user experience, but at least legally a one that works. So I'm a big fan that every federal agency should point data they have on the individual or the consumer back to the individual. Because that makes the rest of this work so much easier. The hard part is, can you validate that information hasn't been tampered with, which is a safety and security issue? It's a different discussion. But at least that principle would solve a lot of the dilemma, challenges on handshakes and then eventually these handoffs.
We have – there's a million more questions I'd like to ask you, and we're about to run out of time. What lessons can agencies that aren't necessarily in the healthcare business learn from the healthcare data revolution that is taking place right now?
Well, the most important thing is that you have information that you're responsible for in your agency that, if made available to the public in a computer-friendly form, might be combined with other data to solve a problem that you didn't think could be solved. Literally, the Census Bureau and the Weather Service, NOAA, populated a bunch of data sets that were made available to the public. A data analytics startup took all that information and built climate change crop insurance, which was not what either two agencies really thought was what their data was meant to do. And it was so successful, the Monsanto Corporation bought their company for $1 billion. Commercially viable, better for the farmer, repurposing public data, sort of a classic example of all these pieces coming together. So what I would say to everybody listening on the show is, look at the data that your particular program or your bureau of the department of wherever you work has, and ask yourself, what could be done if you could present that back to the public? How many meetings could you convene around the country to say, hey, we just published this data. What would you like to do with it? Sometimes serendipity strikes, and that information combines with others to create something very, very useful that you could never imagine. Other times, you had dreams of making something that would be useful to folks that you didn't have the money to create on your own, but thankfully the public did. One small example before you go, My wife and I have kids, and I know installing infant car seats stinks. It's really hard. 50% of the American people install them incorrectly. Mm-hmm. Well, at a Department of Transportation sort of app developer codathon, if you will, someone presented the fact that there's a database in transportation of all the locations in America where you can go to have your infant car seat installation tested. Well, that weekend, a developer built an iPhone app that takes your GPS location and tells you the nearest place you can go to check if your infant car seat is installed properly. Didn't cost the taxpayers a dime, and brought a useful piece of information to families that would otherwise have their children ride in risk. This is the stuff that's happening in ways big and small in every agency. You just got to publish the data and then encourage its use by talking to folks. And that's just one of the three other levers that I would encourage folks to consider that I talk about in the book.
Why do you think federal agencies continue to underestimate the wisdom and the motivation of the crowd and continue to stay focused on this? Oh, nobody probably really cares about this this data. This doesn't mean anything to anybody.
That's the wall of disbelief, Francis. Yeah. We're knocking that down one by one as these stories percolate across the agencies. You could do that? Maybe I'll try. And then you'll think new data sets that you never thought existed pop up and help people live better lives.
I am encouraged that I'm aware of at least one group of thinkers and innovators that get together on an ongoing basis within the government and talk about this stuff, and we'll talk about that some more. I'd love to have you come back and continue this conversation.
Thanks for having me.
Congratulations on the book, Innovative State, How New Technologies Can Transform Government. Anish Chopra of Hunch Analytics, the first government CTO. Our conversation's archived later today at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth.